Trinadapi Sunichena Tarad Iva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sada Hari Hare Nama Hare Nama Hare Nama Ivakivalam Kalo Nastyeva 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 Gatir Anyata. We should always remember that this Krishna book is the special gift to the International Society for Krishna Consciousness from His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As Prabhupada wrote, he did not think or he wasn't sure whether or not he would live long enough to finish the Bhagavatam 10th canto. And as history has shown, Prabhupada predicted that he would not live long enough to finish the 10th canto, as he only was able to finish chapter 13. So in 1969-1970, Prabhupada decided to write a summary study of the 10th canto so that his disciples and followers would have this 10th canto. And so this Krishna book is a summary study of the 10th canto. And I always like to quote the Bhagavad Gita. In the 4th chapter, Krishna says, Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvataha tyaktva dehang punar janma naiti mameti sorjana. Krishna says that if you can understand scientifically, in truth, his janma, his birth, and his karma, activities, then if one can factually understand that, then one does not return to this material world, but goes back home, back to Godhead. So with that in mind, I take this Krishna book class very seriously. As far as I'm concerned, if I simply understand this one book, and if I understand it with my heart and soul, then I will be eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. So let us now begin today's class. Chapter 54 is entitled, Krishna Defeats All the Princes and Takes Rukmini Home to Dwaraka. The whole catastrophe of the defeat was due to the envious nature of Rukmini's elder brother, Rukmi. Having seen his sister forcibly taken away by Krishna, after Rukmi had planned to marry her to Shishupal, Rukmi was frustrated. So, after Shishupal, his friend and intended brother-in-law, returned home, Rukmi, very much agitated, was determined to teach Krishna a lesson personally. He called for his own soldiers, a military phalanx consisting of several thousand elephants, horses, chariots, and infantry. And, equipped with this military strength, he began to follow Krishna to Dwaraka. To show his prestige, Rukmi promised all the returning kings, "You could not help Shishupal marry my sister Rukmini, but I cannot allow Rukmini to be taken away by Krishna. I shall teach him a lesson. Now I am going to follow him." Rukmi presented himself as a big commander and vowed before all the princes, "Unless I kill Krishna in the fight and bring my sister from his clutches, I shall not return to my capital city, Kundina. I make this vow before all of you, and you will see that I shall fulfill it. After thus vibrating all these boasting words, Rukmi immediately got on his chariot and told his chariot driver to pursue Krishna. He said, I want to fight with him immediately. This cowherd boy has become proud of his tricky way of fighting with Kshatriyas. But today, I shall teach him a good lesson. Because he had the impudence to kidnap my sister, I, Rukmi, with my sharp arrows, shall teach him a very good lesson indeed. Thus, this unintelligent man, Rukmi, ignorant of the extent of the strength and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, voiced his impudent threats. In great stupidity, he soon stood before Krishna, telling him repeatedly, Stop for a minute and fight with me. After saying this, he drew his bow and directly shot three forceful arrows against Krishna's body. Then he condemned Krishna as the most abominable descendant of the Yadu dynasty and asked him to stand before him for a minute so that he could teach him a good lesson. You are carrying away my sister, just like a crow stealing clarified butter meant for use in a sacrifice. You are proud of your military strength, but you cannot fight according to regulative principles. You have stolen my sister, and now I shall relieve you of your false prestige. You can keep my sister in your possession only until I beat you to the ground for good with my arrows. Lord Krishna, after hearing all these crazy words from Rukmi, immediately shot an arrow and severed the string of Rukmi's bow, making him unable to use another arrow. Rukmi immediately took another bow and shot another five arrows at Krishna. Being attacked for the second time, Krishna again severed Rukmi's bowstring. Rukmi took a third bow, and Krishna again cut its string. This time, to teach Rukmi a lesson, Krishna shot six arrows at him and then shot another eight arrows, killing four horses with four arrows, killing the chariot driver with another arrow, and chopping off the upper portion of Rukmi's chariot, including the flag, with the remaining three arrows. Rukmi, having run out of arrows, took assistance from swords, shields, tridents, lances, and similar weapons used for fighting hand to hand. But Krishna immediately broke them all in the same way. Being repeatedly baffled in his attempts, Rukmi took his sword and ran swiftly towards Krishna, just as a fly proceeds towards a fire. But as soon as Rukmi reached Krishna, Krishna cut his weapon to pieces. This time, Krishna took out his sharp sword and was about to kill it immediately. But Rukmi's sister, Rukmini, understanding that this time Krishna would not excuse her brother, She fell down at Krishna's lotus feet, and in a very grievous tone, trembling with great fear, she began to plead with her husband. Rukmini first addressed Krishna as Yogeshvara. Yogeshvara means one who is possessed of inconceivable opulence and energy. Krishna possesses inconceivable opulence and energy, whereas Rukmini's brother had only limited military potency. Krishna is immeasurable, whereas her brother was measured in every step of his life. Therefore, Rukmi was not comparable even to an insignificant insect before the unlimited power of Krishna. She also addressed Krishna as the God of the gods. There are many powerful demigods, such as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Indra, Chandra, and Varuna. But Krishna is the Lord of all these gods. Whereas Rukmini's brother was not only an ordinary human being, but in fact the lowest of all, because he had no understanding of Krishna. In other words, a human being who has no conception of the actual position of Krishna is the lowest in human society. Then Rukmini addressed Krishna as Mahabhuja, which means one with unlimited strength. She also addressed Krishna as Jagatpati, the master of the whole cosmic manifestation. In comparison, her brother was only an ordinary prince. In this way, Rukmini compared the position of Rukmi with that of Krishna and very feelingly pleaded with her husband not to kill her brother just at the auspicious time of her being united with Krishna, but he should excuse Rukmi. In other words, she displayed her real position as a woman. She was happy to get Krishna as her husband. At that moment when her marriage to another was to be performed, but she did not want it to be at the loss of her elder brother, who, after all, loved his young sister and wanted to hand her over to one who, according to his own calculations, was a better man. While Rukmini was praying to Krishna for the life of her brother, her whole body trembled, and because of her anxiety, her face appeared to dry up, and her throat became choked. And due to her trembling, the ornaments on her body loosened and fell scattered on the ground. In this manner, when Rukmini was very much perturbed, she fell down on the ground, and Lord Krishna immediately became compassionate and agreed not to kill the foolish Rukmi. But at the same time, he wanted to give him some light punishment, so he tied him up with a piece of cloth and snipped at his mustache, beard and hair, keeping some spots here and there. And while Krishna was dealing with Rukmi in this way, the soldiers of the Yadu dynasty, commanded by Balaram himself, broke the whole strength of Rukmi's army, just as an elephant in a pond discards the feeble stem of a lotus flower. In other words, an elephant breaks the whole construction of a lotus flower while bathing in a reservoir of water. The military strength of the Yadus broke up Rukmi's forces. When the commanders of the Yadu dynasty came back to see Krishna, they were all surprised to see the condition of Rukmi. Lord Balaram became especially compassionate toward his sister-in-law, who was newly married to his brother. To please Rukmini, Balaram personally untied Rukmi, and to further please her, Balaram, as the elder brother of Krishna, spoke some words of chastisement. Krishna, your action is not at all satisfactory. This is an abomination, very much contrary to our family tradition. To cut someone's hair and shave his mustache and beard is almost comparable to killing him. Whatever Rukmi might have been, he is now our brother-in-law, a relative of our family, and you should not have put him in such a condition. After this, to pacify Rukmini, Lord Balaram said to her, "You should not be sorry that your brother has been made odd-looking. Everyone suffers or enjoys the results of his or her own actions." Lord Balaram wanted to impress upon Rukmini that she should not be sorry for the consequences her brother suffered due to his actions. There was no need of being too affectionate toward such a brother. Lord Balaram again turned toward Krishna and said, "My dear Krishna, a relative, even though he commits such a blunder and deserves to be killed, should be excused. For when such a relative is conscious of his own fault, that consciousness itself is like death. Therefore, there is no need to kill him." Balaram again turned toward Rukmini and informed her that the current duty of the Kshatriya in human society is so fixed that according to the principles of fighting, one's own brother may become an enemy. Then a Kshatriya does not hesitate to kill his own brother. In other words, Lord Balaram wanted to instruct Rukmini that Rukmi and Krishna were right in not showing mercy to each other in the fighting, despite the family consideration that they happened to be brothers-in-law. Sri Balaram informed Rukmini that Kshatriyas are typical emblems of the materialistic way of life. They become puffed up whenever there is a question of material acquisition. Therefore, when there is a fight between two belligerent Kshatriyas for kingdom, land, wealth, women, prestige, or power, they try to put one another into the most abominable condition. Balaram instructed Rukmini that her affection toward her brother Rukmi, who had created enmity with so many persons, was a perverse consideration befitting an ordinary materialist. Her brother's character was not at all admirable, considering his treatment of his friends. And yet, Rukmini, like an ordinary woman, was affectionate toward him. Rukmi was not fit to be her brother, and still Rukmini was lenient toward him. Balaram continued, "Besides that, the consideration that a person is neutral or is one's friend or enemy is generally made by persons in the bodily concept of life. Such foolish persons are bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. The spirit soul is of the same pure quality in any embodiment of matter. But those who are not sufficiently intelligent see only the bodily differences between animals and men, literates and illiterates, rich and poor, which cover the pure spirit soul. Such differences, observed merely on the basis of the body, are exactly like the differences between fires in terms of the various types of fuel they consume. Whatever the size and the shape of the fuel, there is no such variety of size and shape in the fire which comes out of it. Similarly, in the sky, there are no differences in size or shape." In this way, Balaram reconciled the situation by his moral and ethical instructions to Rukmini and Krishna. To Rukmini, he stated further, "This body is part of the material manifestation, consisting of the material elements, living conditions, and interactions of the modes of material nature. The living entity or spirit soul, being in contact with these, is transmigrating from one body to another due to illusory enjoyment, and that transmigration is known as material existence. This contact of the living entity with the material manifestation has neither integration nor disintegration. My dear chaste sister-in-law, the spirit soul is, of course, the cause of this material body, just as the sun is the cause of sunlight, eyesight, and the forms of material manifestation." The example of the sunshine and the material manifestation is very important in understanding the living entity's contact with the material world. In the morning, the sun rises, and the heat and light gradually expand throughout the whole day. The sun is the cause of all material shapes and forms, for it is due to the sun that integration and disintegration of material elements takes place. But as soon as the sun sets, the whole manifestation is no longer connected to the sun, which has passed from one place to another. When the sun passes from the eastern to the western hemisphere, the results of the interactions due to the sunshine in the eastern hemisphere remain, but the sunshine itself is visible in the western hemisphere. Similarly, the living entity accepts or produces different bodies and different bodily relationships in a particular circumstance. But as soon as one gives up the present body and accepts another, he or she has nothing to do with the former body. Similarly, the living entity has nothing to do with the next body he or she accepts. One is always free from the contact of this bodily contamination. Lord Balaram continued his speaking. Therefore, the appearance and disappearance of the body have nothing to do with the living entity, just as the waxing and waning of the moon have nothing to do with the moon. When the moon waxes, we falsely think that the moon is developing, and when it wanes, we think the moon is decreasing. Factually, the moon as it is always the same. It has nothing to do with such visible activities of waxing and waning. Lord Balaram continued, one's consciousness in material existence can be compared to sleeping and dreaming. When a man sleeps, he dreams of many non-factual happenings, and as a result of dreaming, he becomes subject to different kinds of distress and happiness. Similarly, when a person is in the dream of material consciousness, he or she suffers the effects of accepting a body and giving it up again in material existence. Opposite to this material consciousness is Krishna consciousness. In other words, when a man is elevated to the platform of Krishna consciousness, he becomes free from this false conception of life. In this way, Sri Balaram instructed Rukmini in spiritual knowledge. He further addressed his sister-in-law in this way. Sweet, smiling Rukmini, do not be aggrieved by false notions caused by ignorance. Only because of false notions does one become unhappy. But one can immediately remove this unhappiness by discussing the philosophy of actual life. So you should be happy on that platform only. After hearing such enlightening instructions from Sri Balaram, Rukmini immediately became pacified and happy and adjusted her mind, which was very much afflicted by the degraded position of her brother Rukmi. As far as Rukmi was concerned, his promise was not fulfilled, nor was his mission successful. He had come from home with his soldiers and military phalanx to defeat Krishna and release his sister. But on the contrary, he lost all of his soldiers and military strength. He was personally degraded and very sorry. But by the grace of the Lord, he could continue his life to its fixed destination. Because he was a Kshatriya, he could remember his promise that he would not return to his capital city, Kundana. Without killing Krishna and releasing his sister, which he had failed to do. Therefore, he decided in anger not to return to his capital city, and thus he constructed a small cottage in the village known as Bojakat, where he resided for the rest of his life. After defeating all the opposing elements and forcibly carrying away Rukmini, Krishna brought her to his capital city Dwaraka and then married her according to the Vedic ritualistic principles. After this marriage, Krishna became the king of the Yadus at Dwaraka. On the occasion of his marriage with Rukmini, all the inhabitants were happy, and in every house there were great ceremonies. The inhabitants of Dwaraka city were so much pleased that they dressed themselves with the nicest possible ornaments and garments and went to present gifts according to their means to the newly married couple, Krishna and Rukmini. All the houses of Yadupuri, Dwaraka, were decorated with flags, festoons, and flowers. Each and every house had an extra gate specifically prepared for this occasion. And on both sides of the gate were big water jugs filled with water. The whole city was made fragrant by the burning of fine incense, and at night there was illumination from thousands of lamps, which decorated every building. The entire city appeared jubilant on the occasion of Lord Krishna's marriage with Rukmini. Everywhere in the city, there were profuse decorations of banana trees and betel nut trees. These two trees are considered very auspicious in such happy ceremonies. At the same time, there was an assembly of many elephants who carried the respective kings of different friendly kingdoms. It is the habit of the elephant that whenever he sees some small plants and trees, out of his sportive and frivolous nature, he uproots the trees and throws them hither and thither. The elephants assembled on this occasion also scattered the banana and betel nut trees. But in spite of such intoxicated action, the whole city, with the trees thrown here and there, looked very nice. The friendly kings of the Kurus and the Pandavas were represented by Bhishma, Dhritarashtra, the five Pandava brothers, King Drupad, King Santardana, and Rukmini's father, Bhishmaka. Because of Krishna's kidnapping Rukmini, there was initially some misunderstanding between the two families. But Bhishmaka, the king of Vidarbha, being approached by Sri Balaram and persuaded by many saintly persons, was induced to participate in the marriage ceremony of Krishna and Rukmini. Although the incident of the kidnapping was not a very happy occurrence in the kingdom of Vidarbha, kidnapping was not an unusual affair among Kshatriyas. Kidnapping was, in fact, current in almost all their marriages. Anyway, King Bhishmaka was from the very beginning inclined to hand over his beautiful daughter to Krishna. In one way or another, his purpose had been served. And so, he was pleased to join the marriage ceremony, even though his eldest son was degraded in the fight. It is mentioned in the Padma Purana that Maharaj Nanda and the cowherd boys of Vrindavan joined the marriage ceremony. Kings from the kingdoms of Kuru, Sanjay, Kekai, Vidarbha and Kunti all came to Dwaraka on this occasion and met with one another very joyfully. The story of Rukmini's being kidnapped by Krishna was poeticized, and professional readers recited it everywhere. All the assembled kings and their daughters especially were struck with wonder and very much pleased upon hearing the chivalrous activities of Krishna. In this way, all the visitors as well as the inhabitants of Dwaraka city were joyful to see Krishna and Rukmini together. In other words, the goddess of fortune was now united with the Supreme Lord, who is the maintainer of everyone. And thus, all the people felt extremely jubilant. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 54th chapter of Krishna, entitled Krishna Defeats All the Princes and Takes Rukmini Home to Dwaraka.
Jamuna Tira Vanachari